This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
This is Well, Well, Well. Sex, health and well-being in our LGBTI communities.
Presented by Joy sponsor VAC.
You are listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. I'm Cal and I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Liam. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Cal?
I'm the most.
Oh, yes.
And this week we are diving back in. We're diving deep all the way to the prostate. We are discussing prostate cancer this week on a serious note there. And the risk and screening for it as well, which, you know, is a conversation I think that we all need to have.
In fact, absolutely.
I was looking at Emanate, the website. So if you have you been on Emanate yet?
I have. I've checked it out quite extensively.
So the article that caught my eye.
Ooh.
Is shooting your load more often could reduce your risk of having prostate cancer.
Now, the studies claiming this sort of thing have been around for quite some time. I remember hearing something to that effect when I was in high school and using that as definite justification for nocturnal emissions.
Yeah. Oh, okay. The hairy palms are worth it.
Yeah, as if I needed anything other than being a teenager.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, so
tell us about the article.
So anyhow, yeah, so it was looking at, I think it was it, scientists carried, in science, carried out by scientists at Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital found that ejaculation frequency may be inversely related to the risk of prostate cancer, a disease for which few modifiable risk factors have been identified. But basically, they had like 32,000 men, you know, keep a... record,
yeah.
I guess, of their business, and they found that men who climax 21 times or more each month were about 20% less likely to be diagnosed with prostate cancer compared to those who shot their load less than 10 times a month.
Oh.
So, look, it's not... We're going to talk to our guest this week about this a bit more, because it's not like a comprehensive, it's not like the be-all and end-all from what it sounds like, but I think we are going to get some professional advice.
But, I mean, I guess from a layman's point of view, I can understand the science... that might be there. I mean, isn't not the thing that you're supposed to do? Is it not the urge that you're supposed to go out there and like spread your seed or whatever? That's just part of the keeping your body healthy thing.
This is, I think, something that we're going to unpack, dive deep into prostate cancer, and unpack or unload. See, look what I'm doing. Is bringing
filthy.
It all around.
It's a good thing this is 8 o'clock.
This is about health. This is about health, Liam Clark. This is about health. But seriousness, prostate cancer is commonly diagnosed. I think either the most commonly diagnosed or the second most commonly diagnosed cancer in men. More than 3,000 men die of prostate cancer in Australia every year. And they estimate that there will be over 16,000 new cases of prostate cancer diagnosed in 2017, which is crazy. Mm. So I guess that's what we're going to talk about today. If you do want to catch that article, emanate.com.au, and the tricky part about it is it's emen8.com.au if you want to read that article.
However, we will, of course, be linking to the article in the podcast page for this episode, which you'll be able to find on joy.org.au/well.
You are good, Liam.
Ah.
There we go. Well, we have a special guest this week. We're going to be talking to Ada Chung, endocrinologist at the Australian Prostate Centre, Austin Health, researcher at the University of Melbourne. Ada's been doing some really amazing work. She's doing clinical work and research in improving health outcomes using hormone therapy, which is what an endocrinologist does.
Uh-huh.
I always knew that, even before today's show.
Yes, I definitely knew that too.
Looks both ways. Ada has been doing research into hormone therapy in prostate cancer and in transgender diverse individuals.
Oh, hot damn.
Yeah. And she leads the trans medical research group at Melbourne Uni. And the only Australian, here are fun facts, you know I love them. The only Australian and one of five individuals worldwide to win the U.S. Endocrine Society Early Investigator Award in 2016. And if she wasn't busy enough last year, she also got the Women in Endocrinology Award in Australia.
My word.
So we've got ourselves someone who knows their business and will be helping us dive deep this week as we unpack or unload all that we need to know about prostate cancer. It's a very, very exciting week this week. So with that in mind, you're listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9.
For sexual health, mental health, and your overall well-being, this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
This is Well, 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 and I'm Cal, joined by my co-host Liam, and we're now joined in the studio as we continue our conversation around prostate cancer health and well-being, I suppose you could say, by endocrinologist at the Australian Prostate Centre and Austin Health, and a researcher who has... She's worked clinically and does research with men with prostate cancer and trans and gender diverse individuals. Ada Chung, how are you? Welcome to Well, Well, Well.
Oh, thank you, Kel and Liam, for having me on the show tonight.
Thank you very much. So at the very start of the show, Liam and I were talking about a study, and we were being a little bit cheeky here because it's, you know, it's very exciting. You
sure.
know? But so are you familiar? Have you heard about the study where they say that the men in this U.S. study, the more times that they had ejaculated over a period of time, that they had a lower risk of prostate cancer?
Yeah, definitely. So it's received a lot of press.
Yeah.
And so the study was a large study in the States that showed that men, younger men who had ejaculated more often seemed to have a lower risk of prostate cancer in their older age. But it's you know, you might on first thought think, oh, well, maybe if I have sex more often, then it'll be good for my prostate health in the long run. But the problem with the study is that you can't actually work out whether men who have more sex or more ejaculation are just a healthier population.
Okay.
Perhaps more have more vitality than other men, because being unhealthy and overweight in itself is a risk factor for prostate cancer.
Okay.
So the study is really interesting, but we can't tease out, is it actually the ejaculation frequency or is it just the fact that they're healthier and that they, because of their healthy lifestyle or you could say that that they have a lower risk of prostate cancer.
Okay. But okay. So it needs to be viewed in a larger framework.
Yep. But at the very least, it doesn't hurt.
It doesn't. It's certainly no harm.
It's certainly no harm. All right. Well, that's the takeaway for everyone, is you're not doing yourself any harm. And maybe, just maybe.
Maybe.
There you go. There's more to it. But I guess when it comes to prostate cancer, I mean, let's really draw the whole thing back.
Yep.
Because I actually was having a discussion with a couple friends recently where, you know, we've heard of the prostate. But it's one of those things, and most men, especially men who are having sex with other men, they know that the prostate is somewhere down there near their bum.
Yeah, somewhere down there. Yeah.
But where would one find a prostate?
Yep. So the prostate is a gland about the size of a walnut.
Okay.
And it sits underneath the bladder.
Yep.
And it wraps itself around the urethra, which is the tube where the urine passes through. So it connects, the urethra connects the bladder to the end of the penis, basically where the urine comes out. So it's sort of a little bit like a cork at the bottom of the bladder.
Okay.
And so it's in charge of, why do we have a prostate? Well, why do men have a prostate?
Yep.
It's in charge of making semen and ejaculation fluid predominantly.
Okay.
And keeping the semen not too acidic.
Okay, there you go.
Oh.
Very fun fact, Liam.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, so I guess with that in mind too, what's the relationship between, because obviously people talk about their prostate with regard to anal sex sometimes, and that like that's what makes it pleasurable for guys.
Yep.
Is that, so where is it in relation to that? So is it, you know?
It sort of sits in front of the rectum.
Okay.
So in front of the back passage.
Okay. And is it in the
pelvis, right at the bottom.
So as a gland, is it that it have nerve endings in it that it creates? Like,
it doesn't actually have nerve endings itself, but, you know, it is, you know, men do report that it is a site for sexual pleasure during anal sex.
All right. There
and
you
that's
go.
Something can that can be affected if the prostate's taken out.
Ah, okay. Well, let's get to that when we talk about treatment and stuff as well. But I guess, again, looking broader picture here. Prostate cancer itself, how common is prostate cancer?
Incredibly common. It's probably one of the leading causes of cancer in Australia in men.
Yep.
So one in seven men are going to have prostate cancer at some point in their lifetime.
Wow.
So it's incredibly common. It's more common as men get older.
Yep.
And the good news is that it's very readily treatable, and most men are actually going to die with prostate cancer rather than of prostate cancer, because it tends to be relatively slow growing.
Okay. So wait, so let's, okay, so they're going to die with prostate cancer, but of prostate
cancer.
That's
right.
So is there a relationship, like we've talked on the show before, that there's a relationship between, say, like HPV, which is really common, and anal cancer, or, you know, sometimes your risk of hep C is more common if you're living with HIV. Is there sort of a relationship between anything else, like between prostate cancer and any other comorbidities?
Well, you know, risk factors for prostate cancer include being of older age,
yep,
of African descent,
okay,
and we don't understand why that is. Also, there's a high risk of prostate cancer in people who are overweight and living an unhealthy lifestyle. So they're the main things, but there's no particular virus or other disease that, yep, that predisposes to prostate cancer.
Okay. All right. Well, look, we're definitely going to continue this conversation on. I think there's a lot more to unpack. I think we're going to talk a little bit more about sexual health and also how this affects trans health as well, which I believe is an area of expertise for you.
Yeah, that's right.
That's all coming up next. You're listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9.
This is Well, 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 presented by Joy sponsor VAC on Joy 94.9.
This week on Well, 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 we are talking about prostate cancer. I'm Cal, and I'm joined by my co-host Liam and our special guest, endocrinologist Ada. How are you?
Good, thanks, Cal.
Very good. Well, look, we were unpacking a little bit of prostate cancer before, and we were talking about sexual health, and I guess I'd like to return to that. So you were saying before, we were saying that, you know, as you get older, you're at risk for this, and, you know, maybe not putting the cart before the horse, but you said that treatment with prostate cancer may have an effect on your sexual health.
Yeah, definitely. So there's, depending on the type of prostate cancer, how aggressive it is,
okay,
sometimes men need treatment,
yep,
and that could be surgery.
Okay.
So removing the prostate, or it could be radiotherapy.
Okay.
Or it could be hormone therapy. And all of these treatments can potentially affect sexual function.
Okay. So I guess in the case of, would it be a prostatectomy, is that?
Yeah,
what
that's right. Okay. Prostatectomy.
So, and then we were saying before that there's been a lot of men that reported that's a point of sexual pleasure, especially if you are having anal sex.
Yeah,
I suppose that would have obvious impact on intimate relationships in that
most
regard.
Most certainly.
Yeah. All right. And does it have? I guess in the other cases, if it's not prostatectomy, what are, you know, maybe possible impacts on intimate relationships?
Yeah. So, hormone therapy and radiotherapy can both decrease libido.
Okay.
It can also decrease the firmness of erections, so cause erectile dysfunction.
All right, yeah.
And radiotherapy can, and surgery can sometimes affect the rectum as well.
Okay.
So that can cause rectal pain or irritation, which can be an issue for men who are receptive during anal sex.
Is that something that, you know, you recover from? I mean, obviously, in a prostatectomy, it's gone. So that's sort of the end game there, no pun intended. But in the case of radiotherapy or hormone therapy, is that something that people progressively get out of as they recover?
That's a really good question. Oh. So radiotherapy, there are some side effects in it then that can occur acutely, so okay, during radiotherapy, which tends to, you know, get better over time. But hormone therapy, depending on the duration, so often we give it for 6 months in some cases, but in higher risk cases, we might give it for 2 to 3 years. And so that causes a man to have very low testosterone levels,
yep,
for many, many years.
Okay.
And it can take several years to recover after that. So potentially we're affecting a man's sexual function for many, many years.
Okay.
Which has got significant effects on quality of life and the individual and on partners as well.
And that's a pretty full on, I think.
It's very full on.
Yeah, I guess.
And perhaps not completely appreciated by individuals and also clinicians. We don't talk about sexual health enough, I think.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I think the interesting thing is you get this really kind of this difficult situation because, as you said, this is an aging population. And I think we probably don't talk about sex and aging enough.
Yeah.
Let alone sex, aging and impacts of things like prostate cancer. Are there support groups out there for this sort of thing?
Definitely. So there's general prostate cancer support groups. So there's Prostate Cancer Foundation,
yep,
of Australia. There's also Cancer Council of Victoria. But there's also specific support groups, particularly in Melbourne and Sydney, for gay men who,
okay,
have prostate cancer.
Great.
And you can find contact details on the Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia website.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, it sounds like it would definitely need to be because of the nature of it. And yeah, those kind of specific intricacies that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there has been some, you know, there hasn't been a lot of focus, and you find a lot of information that's targeted at sort of heterosexual couples. There's a real heterosexual bias. And so, you know, there's increasing recognition that, you know, we need to provide specific information for, you know, the gay and bisexual community.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. I think we forget about that these things have complexities when you add them to different populations.
That's right.
And it's great to hear that there is some support in that area. Now, look, there's a lot more because I also would like to talk about the trans community.
Yeah.
And I know that's sort of an area of expertise.
Definitely.
For you. And I think a lot of times when we think about prostate cancer, we think just men. But the reality is that not just men have a prostate. In the case of trans women, a prostate exists as well.
That's
and
right.
Yeah, that's an area, that's a specialty for you?
Yeah, I have a real interest in providing clinical care and also trying to improve treatments through medical research for the trans community because, you know, the gay and bisexual community have been underrepresented, but the trans community have been even more underrepresented, I think. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done to improve awareness amongst doctors and also amongst the general community and also improve health outcomes because, you know, getting access to care is a real issue.
Ada, so we were talking before the break about communities, I guess, that we don't traditionally think of when we think of prostate cancer, because usually we think men, but we don't also have to consider that trans women have a prostate as well. And this is an area for you. What do we know? Is there much research?
There's very little research in trans women, even in women who've had a vaginoplasty, so yep. Surgery, gender-affirming surgery. The prostate's usually left in.
Okay.
Trans women often receive feminizing hormone therapy.
Right, because you mentioned hormone therapy as like sort of a treatment option for guys with prostate cancer.
That's right.
How does that play out here?
Yeah, so to treat prostate cancer, we give hormones to lower testosterone because testosterone's a fuel for prostate cancer. But in trans women, we give feminizing hormone therapy that also lowers testosterone. So we're essentially, you could consider it giving a treatment for prostate cancer to trans women anyway. And so it's not clear whether we should screen for prostate cancer in trans women. However, there have been cases. So, you know, in the literature, there have been some reports of prostate cancer in trans women, and it tends to be more aggressive because if it is picked up, it tends to be a cancer that sort of overcome the usual treatments. So overcome the low testosterone environment.
Okay.
And more aggressive cases are picked up.
So are there guidelines around that, around, you know, we were saying before with age, and we'll talk about this, I suppose, with from a screening standpoint later on about where that age sits at.
Yeah.
Is there sort of any guidelines around trans health?
There is no real guidelines, but a discussion needs to be had for all trans women who have a prostate with their treating doctor, because it needs to be considered, because prostate cancer can occur. And, you know, I think you need to talk about it if you're a bit older, so over 50.
Okay.
Years of age, or if you have a family history of prostate cancer,
okay.
Most definitely talk about it and consider screening. But then the considerations when screening are that often having had feminizing hormone therapy, the prostate's already quite small.
Okay.
And so a finger examination, which is commonly called a digital rectal examination, may not necessarily pick it up. And also PSA, which is a common blood test, is typically going to be low in anyone who's on feminizing hormone therapy.
What does PSA stand for?
It stands for prostate-specific antigen, which is a cancer marker, a prostate cancer marker. The problem is that it's not 100%. It can go up in other things. So if you've got an infection in the prostate, it will go up too. But if it's up, we need to exclude cancer.
Okay.
And it's not that sensitive in trans women.
Okay.
So, you know, the normal cutoffs don't apply. So it's tricky and we need more research.
Okay. Absolutely. Is anyone sort of going into that area? Are you? Is your own research taking you in that space?
Oh, well, we haven't. It's something. Well, there's so many things we want to research.
So course,
it's definitely something we want to look at in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's very, very exciting. Now, I guess when you were talking before about screening, what you were saying, the cutoff is about 50 years old, roughly. But then there's other factors like if your family has had it before.
That's right. So, you know, there are some guidelines for all. The general population in Australia, it's very controversial because, you know, there's harms associated with screening as well. So screening the whole population is actually not recommended. However, they say that it's an individual decision. So
okay.
I recommend all individuals with a prostate talk about it with
yep.
your GP, and particularly consider it if you're over 50 or if you're over 40 and have a family history of prostate cancer. So if you have a family history, you've got over 3 times the risk of having prostate cancer.
Yep.
Or if you're, you know, of African-American descent.
Okay. Now, you said there a moment ago that there it's a little bit controversial because it could be harmful for screening.
That's
is there
right.
a risk in screening?
There is a risk. So, as I said, sometimes PSA can be up because of reasons other than cancer.
Okay.
And to confirm it, you need to have a biopsy.
Oh.
And so biopsy has got complications in itself,
yep.
bleeding, infection. But then often, you know, the argument for not implementing it in the whole population is that most prostate cancer is low risk
yep.
and not going to kill a man.
Yep.
And it's picking up prostate cancer that's just going to be sitting there and cause unnecessary angst and worry for men
yep.
who don't necessarily need treatment. And in some men who we do end up treating, sometimes the treatments have significant side effects.
Mm.
And so there's, you know, there's other considerations, you know, potential harm of screening that need to be taken into account.
So it sounds like with these complexities, it's a conversation.
It's a conversation with your GP.
Okay.
And I encourage all men to have the conversation.
Okay. Well, look, I think I want to chat with you about a little bit more about that and a couple more considerations for those men and trans women in the LGBTI community that need to be thinking about prostate cancer. And that's what we are talking about this week on Well, Well, Well. Stay with us. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
Keeping you in good health. This is Well, Well, Well. Joy 94.9.
This is Well, 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 and we are certainly trying to keep people in good health this week. I'm Cal, joined by my co-host Liam, and we are joined by endocrinologist Anna Chung. We are chatting prostate cancer and, yeah, looking after your well-being, specifically in the LGBTI community. We were talking about trans health before, specifically around trans women and considerations around prostate health. But in the break, we were also talking about, I guess, the implications that this can have on men who are having sex with other men. And you mentioned a couple other elements. We talked
That's
earlier
right.
about, you know, in the case of a prostatectomy, obviously you lose that area that has been reported as, you know, having a real help and that the rectum gets affected. But it was interesting because you were telling me about how the loss of ejaculation plays a role as well.
Yeah, that plays a big role. So as I mentioned, the prostate's in charge of making semen or ejaculation fluid. And when you treat the prostate for prostate cancer, either with surgery or with radiation, there is going to be a loss of ejaculate.
Yeah.
And so the volume of semen is going to decrease significantly. And for gay men or bi men, that can be a real concern and a real issue and perhaps not necessarily mentioned. So, you know, that can affect sexual function and it can also affect individual identity.
That's a really interesting, because I've heard before, you know, in the health space, we've heard before about, like, especially women with breast cancer that, you know, having a mastectomy, obviously there's that real loss of part of their feminine
That's
identity.
Right, yeah.
And I guess that sexual function, not to say that all gay men and bisexual men, but certainly it's a part of our culture. Yeah, loss of identity
and
is
a
really interesting.
Loss of that male identity is what's reported by a lot of gay and bisexual men, which can affect their social functioning. So, you know, there can be social stigma, the ability, you know, having the ability to perform is really important for a lot of men in a social setting.
Yep.
And losing that ability to perform or perform as well can really affect, you know, quality of life, their socializing and mental health.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, it would have a huge effect, I guess, create a point of anxiety.
That's right,
Yeah, that's really interesting, and I guess something we haven't thought of, which gets back to the importance of those kind of peer support roles, I suppose we said earlier in the show.
Yeah, and men find a lot of benefit from, you know, speaking to other men who are going through the same thing, and understanding others who understand what they're going through and how it impacts their identity and their sexuality.
I guess, too, it sort of begs the question of, you said earlier with screening, you know, depending on your risk factors maybe after 40 if, you know, you've got it in your family or you're of an African background. But then after 50 after that, but I guess, what about the conversation around prostate cancer? Do you think, you know, when does that begin?
Well, I think that it should begin at around 40 with your GP.
Okay.
And, you know, I mentioned that there's a lot of debate about PSA screening, but the conversation should be had.
Yep.
Because we don't talk about it enough.
Yep.
And it's not just prostate cancer, but prostate health.
Yep.
So, you know, men as they get older can get enlarged prostate, can affect the waterworks. You know,
yep.
if men can have difficulty passing urine, starting, difficulty stopping, and going to the toilet at night. So there's lots of, you know, general prostate health is a consideration for all men, yep, particularly as they get older.
And I suppose because you talked about the fact that the risk factor is that being in your family, for a younger guy that might be listening right now, I guess it's a matter of, hey, talk to the older men in your life while they're alive right now and ask them.
Spot on. Yeah. Talk to your family. You know, what medical conditions have been in the family? Has your father or your uncle had prostate cancer? And if so, go get checked.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, I guess that's the takeaway for everybody there, is that that conversation, you need to have an earlier conversation about your family history. And then after 40, we need to be having that conversation with the GP.
Yep, that's
absolutely
right.
Well, look, you know, this has been wonderful, absolutely wonderful to know, I guess, these additional elements. And it's really reassuring to hear that there's, you know, an interest in a research in that area. Is there any research that you're getting involved with in the near future?
Yeah, so I do a lot of research trying to improve outcomes for men having hormone therapy for prostate cancer. So that's based at the University of Melbourne and Austin Health. And we've got lots of research trials happening. I also do a lot of research trying to improve outcomes for trans and gender diverse individuals.
Great.
And so we've got various research studies that I'd love everyone to participate in, whether you identify as trans or whether you don't.
Yep.
We need control participants as well. And you can find out how much muscle you have, how strong your bones are, you know, what's your percentage body fat, and all sorts of interesting health things. So I'd encourage everyone to, we've got a few websites, but our Facebook page, Trans Medical Research. We've got a Twitter page, also Austin Health webpage. And the Australian Prostate Centre webpage has got a lot of information about prostate health and getting checks as well. And I encourage all men to speak to their GP as the first point of call.
And so any of those links that have just been mentioned will be available on the resources section of this week's episode on joy.org.au/wellwellwell.
Yes, absolutely, because it sounds like there's quite a few options there.
There are. There's a lot of information out there, and we'll make sure all the links are available.
And if people, you know, is your wealth of knowledge on those pages as well, or where do people find more info from you?
Yeah, so I have a webpage as well, which I'm happy to promote.
Sure.
But, you know, the Facebook page is a great start.
Okay, great. And so that Facebook page, again, that was
Trans Medical Research.
Trans Medical Research. Ada Chung, thank you so much for enlightening us on these various factors around prostate cancer, screening, and the implications that it will have, not only in men who are having sex with other men, but trans women as well. Thank you so much for coming onto the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
This is Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. If you did miss any of the show, as Liam rightly pointed out, you can always catch it in podcast on joy.org.au/wellwellwell.
But also on the iTunes store.
Oh, there you go. Always good to know. You're listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Sophie Monk, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
That is right, Sophie. You are listening to Joy 94.9. And in fact, you are listening to Well, Well, Well. I'm Cal, joined with my co-host Liam. And that's, you know, another show for us this week, Liam.
Yeah.
A big thank you to endocrinologist Ada Chung for helping us dive deep and unpack prostate cancer and what we need to understand about it. We covered quite a bit. Liam, was there like a major takeaway for you this week?
Well, I think by far the major takeaway was that you need to have conversations. You need to be aware of the history of prostate cancer in your family. So you need to speak to members of your family to find out if that is a risk. And then you need to speak to your doctor about getting checked.
I mean, absolutely. I think Ada was sort of saying, you know, look, it's, you know, between 40 and 50, you probably need to be starting to have that conversation with your GP. But if you're under that, I mean, the takeaway from this episode is, talk to your family about the, you know, any history of prostate cancer and really any cancers at all. I think that's really having that medical history. I think we sort of take it for granted and think, oh, I'll ask when it's necessary. But one of the aspects, I mean, really grim aspects, is that some of those people who will know about those things will eventually pass and you may not necessarily know.
And if it's something that you're going to have to be concerned about when you're 40, 50, 60, your grandparents probably won't be around then.
Yeah.
So you need to get on that earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are definitely the major takeaways. And I guess what I found so interesting as well is that, you know, that history is important to talk about because it does defy, you know, normal, you know, not normal, but I guess the norm or what people would consider, you know, men are at risk of prostate cancer. Yes, but so are trans women.
Yeah.
And it's very, very interesting to hear Ada talk about how, you know, really this is uncharted territory around that research. And hopefully they do have more insight into that because it's,
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess now is the time. Like, the last couple of years is when trans issues have really come to the forefront. So now people are really, really thinking about trans issues like this. Whereas before, it possibly wouldn't have been something that would have really come up before too much.
And I think what Ada said about, you know, what it's interesting because the risk factor is actually, does hormone therapy when transitioning actually mitigate the risk around prostate cancer, or, you know, does it actually make it harder to identify? So it'd be very interesting to see what comes of that. And hopefully, you know, Ada will be doing some groundbreaking research in the not-so-distant future.
Yeah, getting some more awards that she so rightly deserves.
There you go.
What a legend.
Well, look, if you have missed any of this week's show, be sure to head back over to joy.org.au/well, or you can always catch us on podcast on iTunes.
Yay!
Yay! That is another episode of Well, Well, Well. Join us next week, Monday, 8 p.m. Should we make a date for it,
Liam? Yeah, let's lock it in. I think we can commit to that.
I've got something in my calendar. yeah, no, look, I'll clear that. You know, I've pushed it twice, but I'm sure they'll understand.
Coming up next is 21st Century Women.
There you go. You are listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. Have a great week.
Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.